Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Indeed, by faith our ancestors received approval. By faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen is made from things that are not visible. That's such an amazing statement, especially because it's sort of scientifically profound as well, isn't it? I get a lot of notes about faith, especially on Facebook. For those of you who don't use Facebook, they're called memes, like this. The problem with most of these, like the problem that I find in expressing ideas about faith in church, is that a lot are beautiful pictures expressing a rose-colored idea of faith. And they're often judgmental. Though a lot of them are intended to be inspiring, there's sort of a feeling that there's something wrong if you're struggling with faith, that faith should come easily, or that faith is a moral obligation. Or that if you just had real faith, everything would be all right. Nothing would bother you, no one would get hurt, no one you love would die, you wouldn't get sick. I do like the funny ones, the ones that make me stop and smile. That's a Canadian one. And some of these even inspire me. But there are others. The ones that tell you if you had the right kind of faith, you'd share the prejudices and judgments you see expressed by people who call themselves Christians. There are even the ones who make you lose your faith, at least your faith in humanity. But on the other hand, I get things like this. The idea that faith is only for fools, for the ignorant, or for the stupid. But none of these represents what faith actually is. Could we move to the next slide? The Apostle Paul wrote that faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. By faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen was made from things that are not visible. Faith is an understanding that there is something greater than ourselves. It's an understanding that we are part of that something. And at its most mature, faith is the understanding that that which is greater than we are, that which we call divine, was not made for us, but we for it. We are part of it. For we know only in part, and we prophesy only in part, but when the complete comes, the partial will come to an end. When I was a child, I spoke like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became an adult, I put an end to childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face. Now I know only in part, but then I will know fully, even as I have been fully known. And now these, faith, hope, and love abide, these three, and the greatest of these is love. We also use faith to describe a particular religion. And in that context, we too often see faith, the faith itself, as something that is only historical. We look to the past only. We point to the glories of the past, and at worst, start to think that faith demands that we try to pull ourselves back into that imagined, nostalgic past. But our faith does not lie in the past. In fact, faith in the past is pointless. For faith is the foundation of the future. Faith is the origin of hope, the fountain of aspiration. Faith is the seed of possibility, the home of courage, the rich soil of love. Faith for the future is the source of ethical behavior and the pursuit of that possibility that we can be more tomorrow than we are today. More true, more honorable, more loving, more forgiving, more close to God, more. It does not mean we'll be more rich or more powerful or sadly more sexy. When the Apostle Paul wrote these words 2,000 years ago, he wrote not to communities that lived in safety. He wrote to communities that lived in great trial. There was war. There was rampant poverty. Slavery was a fact of life for many of the people that he wrote to. It was hard to identify friend from enemy. Families were divided. Women's roles were uncertain. Christian communities were divided within themselves as people sought power, and people looking to the past to enforce a social class lines, people refusing to speak one another, even share a meal. Those were the people within the community. But also people trying to face an entirely uncertain future, living honorably, dutifully, with Christian love and forgiveness and joy, not bowed down by the weight of those, but in joy. One of the great fallacies of the idea of faith is that it keeps things from changing, that Christianity or other religions or your faith in God or Christ will keep your life somehow frozen in time. As I say it, it seems so obvious, and yet it is one of the most common fallacies, that it will keep us simply safe, warm, comfortable, and familiar. And nothing could be further from the origins of Christianity. The faith of Paul was not a faith for the sofa. It was for people whose lives changed every day. People on the move, people who were jumping into life, people who'd been thrown out of their homes, taken from their families, setting out on journeys by choice or necessity. Faith for the old, like Abraham and Sarah, who set out on a great journey to become founders of a nation, or like young Jacob, who ran, chased from his home, into a destiny he had never expected. Faith didn't leave Abraham, Sarah, Jacob, Rachel, Moses, Miriam, John, or even Jesus safe at home. Faith was what called them to the unknown. Moses was sent to speak truth to a dangerous power. His sister Miriam was called to help lead the people from relative safety, even in slavery, to a desert in which they built a new nation. You saw a quote there from Bill Mayer. Bill Mayer and other atheists have called faith a fantasy for the weak-minded. But I've seen nothing weak-minded in the examples of Bishop Tutu, Pope Francis, Dorothy Day, and Stan McKay, or Lois Wilson, who I saw recently, by the way, at 89 years old, getting on a bus from Kenora, where she'd been canoeing, 89, carrying a little backpack with her hiking boots strapped on beside it. There is nothing weak-minded about Lois Wilson, let me tell you. And when I hear those words, that fantasy is for the weak-minded, I'm reminded of the writings of one of my favorite comic writers, fantasy writers, Terry Pratchett. At the end of one of his fantasy novels, he tells of a conversation between Death and Death's adopted granddaughter, Susan. And Susan says to Death, "Are you saying that humans need fantasies to make life bearable?" And Death, who always speaks in capital letters, says, "Really? As if it was some kind of pink pill? No. Humans need fantasy to be human, to be the place where the falling angel meets the rising ape." Susan asks him, "But really, fantasies like tooth fairies, Santa Claus?" "Yes. As practice, you have to start out learning to believe the little lies." "So that we can believe the big ones?" "Yes. Justice, mercy, duty, that kind of thing. But they're not the same at all. You think not? Then take the universe and grind it down to the finest powder and sieve it through the finest sieve, and then show me one atom of justice, one molecule of mercy. And yet, you act as if there is some ideal order in the world, as if there is some rightness in the universe by which it may be judged. And Susan said, yes, but people have got to believe that, or else what's the point? And Death said, exactly. Justice, mercy, compassion, duty, without which, what's the point? These are the things of which the universe is made, the things that are not seen. There is a universe waiting to be explored, a world waiting for our help, people trembling for action, for justice, mercy, compassion, and meaning. And we can act in those only if we have faith in that fantasy. C.S. Lewis said, if you look for truth, you may find comfort in the end. But if you look for comfort, you will not get either comfort or truth, only soft soap and wishful thinking to begin, but in the end, despair. Aim at heaven, he said, and you will get earth thrown in. Aim at earth, and you will get neither. We're going to sing a hymn in a minute. It's a hymn about going out